Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I am your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you my conversation with Michael, my main man that has recently relocated his family from active duty military service to our community, joined our church, joined our operations here in construction, and we have been playing around with some new and interesting ways to deliver more pertinent content to your life. I know we're already doing that pretty well here, but I just feel like we're always missing some of the more nitty-gritty, tactical, technical aspects of living your life on target. And we've been experimenting with ways to deliver the content, whether it's through a premium feed or whether it's just more regularly talking with a guy that is farther back on the path than I am and chasing after me, catching up to me, and getting their perspective. Because I've been doing this real estate thing, this entrepreneurial thing for a really long time, and sometimes I forget what it was like at the very beginning. And that's one of the reasons why we started doing this podcast earlier, was to capture that perspective, to capture the optic that I have now at the 7-year mark in construction, but then real estate for almost 15 years now, before we lose the perspective of the life in the trenches, building a productive household. And Michael's starting out his journey, free from the military, having freedom with his time, and is working on helping us build our operations here. And we're having a lot of great conversations. So what follows is a conversation that we had about a bunch of different topics, but about business, about taking risk, about the options that are available to you, how to do that, how to cultivate it in your family. So here is some excerpts from that conversation. We hope you find it immensely practical. Enjoy.
You're saying we need workers.
I want to create a spot where people want to work, where when you come to work, because you and I both experienced the government. We thought that was going to be it. Cool guns, sexy missions, you know, tip of the spear, blah, 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 blah. The culture sucked because there was no way to get ahead faster. It's time. Or every year you get a pay raise that is 2% while inflation was 11. So you're getting less and less money. They're not updating your cost of a housing allowance based on current market conditions. They're not. You can't pass the incompetent boss. You're never going to pass. He's going to move up. You're going to move up behind him. That crop of people that are your leaders are always going to be over you, and you can't pass them up. You can't look at this guy and be like, this dude is a jerk. He doesn't know how to manage people. But he's the master sergeant, or he's the sergeant major, and there's no way for me to catch him. And my buddy who left the military and went double Ivy League into Bank of America culture, so he found out he's in his mid-30s, and he's going into Bank of America, and he's got a 26-year-old manager who went right to school out the gate and went right into Bank of America culture or whatever, and he can't pass her. And she's threatened by him because he's 35 years old and has multiple combat rotations and life experience and understands people better than she does. And so she actually just stiffs him on his bonus instead of, you know, healthy culture, like, hang on, I got this guy on my team that's got life experiences that can see, I could actually go to him and be like, what do you think about this? How do we do this? And you could innovate and you could create, but no, you're not going to do that. Anyway, all that to say is when I got out and I was starting as just me with a truck, with tools that I had accumulated over doing real estate for 6-8 years, I needed business help. I needed someone to tell me how to calculate overhead, what to charge. None of the Modern Craftsman podcast, Construction Life podcast talked about what is a good hourly rate to start out with, or what is a good way to start out at this hourly rate, but then at the end of the month, do this assessment and see, was that enough? Where we're at right now with Transform, we have a full pipeline. Now, We can't assume that everyone in our pipeline is going to be, but the way we have done it is, if you've paid me 10 grand, you're probably going to go with me.
Right.
So we've not let anyone in that far. And so we basically have this belief that we're going to be able to close it. But there's also people stacking up behind them in the pipeline. So it's like, oh, wait, we thought we were going to send our crew to this next job. We didn't sign that contract, but we've got somebody else, or I got side projects to send them to. Or I got rental properties. I got a farm. I'm building a barn, doing all this kind of stuff. So the business knowledge, the how to do it as a, like, tactically is missing for people. And you're talking about the fear of the unknown. That literally is the other thing I've talked about in that podcast on Life on Target, on things people never tell you about the military, is how long it's going to take. And I'm going to publish Larson, Hicks, and I talked. I think this is the talk that's going to go out this week. I haven't edited it yet.
How long it takes to switch from the pain of receiving everything, the security of the military, to, okay, now I'm not
struggling? Well, it's that, but it's also like doing a worst case scenario assessment, like worst case scenario for when you get in out.
Like runway.
Runway. But even then, like, you're in the United States. You go completely bankrupt. So you file bankruptcy, all your debt gets wiped out, your credit score sucks, and you're in a one-bedroom apartment with six kids, you know? And so you have to put bunk beds in the living room, you know, or whatever. That's not a bad situation to be in.
No one's starving.
No one's starving. You could literally go to the high-end restaurant in town. What time do they close? And camp out and get all the food your family needs out of the dumpster, like, every day, because of the mass amounts of food. And I've dumpster dived before. Like, that's the other thing, is like, oh, I'm not going to get in a dumpster. Like, literally the food was on the five-star restaurant of the city, prepared, whatever, got thrown out. It's in a plastic bag, you know, whatever. Like, we have such a terrible perspective of what the worst case scenario is. Like, worst case scenario, we have to have one car as a family. You know, I got a bike to work, you know, whatever. Like, there's so many jobs that need to be done. And so that was what Larson was saying. If you sit down and write worst case scenario, we lose everything. We lose all our possessions. We have literally just the clothes on our back and our kids. Like, that was one of the realizations I had when I was getting sued. I was sitting in the courtroom, but my wife loves me and my kids love me. You know, there's nothing that can change that. I'm not going to jail whether I lose this lawsuit or not. Like, the relationships that I have, the quality kind of stuff, that's like, they're not putting me in jail. It's only money. Okay? So I have nothing. Now, I am a 15 years of professional experience post-high school, you know, 1 year of business experience. I start my next business now knowing one of the things I got was an MBA in contracts. You know, what was... So it's like, all right, now I got this new knowledge that came painfully out. But ultimately, I built this in 15 years. I got all this knowledge now. I can go back and build in 7. And they didn't take everything. I ended up losing a lot of money, ultimately. Like, it was a net loss for my business. But knowledge-wise, I learned everything. And so that was just like a realization. Why am I sitting? I'm sitting in this courtroom. I'm more nervous about this greasy attorney than I was clearing caves in Afghanistan with machine gun bursts in my face. And it's literally about perception. And I literally sitting there, my heart rate was going in the courtroom, and I'm like, what the heck? Why am I'm literally physiological response in a courtroom as a guy that has a Purple Heart, multiple Valorous Awards from in firefights, you know, and I don't remember, potentially I had the same physiological response that had a huge, like, shot of adrenaline, and so I was in the same physiological state, but I did not remember after clearing the caves and near-death experience just standing there being like, oh my gosh, like there was none of that. Like, but in a courtroom, when I have no money, like I paid my last dollars to the painter. I paid attorneys all the way up to this point. It's not going well. We weren't making any money on the mansion yet. I'm pretty sure we're literally living in the mansion without air conditioning at that time. And so maybe one or two working bathrooms, corporate bank account. I could go back and pull it. Corporate bank account maybe has a grand in it. I got $4,500 a month in mortgages. You know, I had not figured out how to get good clients, had crazy clients stacking on top of that. So it's like, is this as bad as it gets? Like, I literally was like, I'm not getting shot at. That was my business moniker that became, I'm not getting shot at. I had the perspective to realize that I wasn't going to die. And then if worst case scenario, I wasn't going to go to jail. So because I didn't do anything illegal that was going to carry penalties, I wasn't going to lose my license. Like all these things, it's not that bad. And that was what Larson said. If you do a worst case analysis of what's the worst thing that can happen here, it's not die. It's not go to jail. It's have no money. And that's the thing with Americans. We just feel like having no money is the worst case. And we treat that like death. I have nothing in my bank account, you know? Like, okay. So you go get a barista job at Starbucks. You go to Lowe's and say, I want to work the plumbing aisle at Lowe's. You're getting a paycheck. In a month, money's going into your account. You know, you show up into a restaurant and say, hey, I got six kids. Before you throw the food in the dumpster, would you just stick it in this Rubbermaid? You know, like, I'll pick it up. Whatever. You can think your way out of these situations. And in America, and that's why everybody wants to come to America. That's why people are swimming across the Med from Libya to try to get to Italy or whatever. They were swimming across. I don't know what situation now because I removed myself from international politics since I started focusing local. But that's why people do that, because if they can just get to America, they can have nothing except opportunity, an opportunity to not starve and build something. And so many people, the unknown of financial risk, or that just haven't sat down with their wife and kids or whatever and said, what is the worst that's going to happen if I quit this job? The other side of it is, how much of your time are you devoting to that learning perspective? So the Michael Kilpatrick episode we talked about is getting a skill. So most people haven't tried to get another skill. They haven't done an assessment of what they can do. What is marketable? What is sellable? What can I do? Like even just, all right, I'm going to learn. I'm going to buy a couple things about leather working. I'm going to cut some stamps. You know, I'm going to sew together some stuff on Etsy. Mm-hmm. Even if at Etsy, like what does the market support? I get social media stuff for free. I can start putting out info. And then if you're still working that job that you hate, you know, the moniker is side hustle. But what I think it really is I'm getting skills acquisition while I'm not worried about paying my daily bills. You know, talk about that 168 hours in a work week, sleep 8 hours a day, 20 hours or 50, work 50 hours, sleep 8 hours a day, take the whole Sabbath off, spend 2 hours a day on hygiene. I think you have 34 hours left. So nobody's working 50 hours a week. Very few people are working 50 hours a week. You and I are working 50 hours a week, maybe, because we're getting here at 6 and we're working till 4. But most people aren't working very hard. They're nervous about an unknown that's really not that bad. And they're not working to get skill. I mean, we have this durable trades right there. You can literally pull that book out. There's 100 vocations that have been around forever. And you can pick one of those things and say, I want to do this. One of these things that jumps out to me, I'm going to do this for 90 days. Didn't work. I'm going to pick the number 2 one. But the reality is, and that's where I have been and realized, is I don't care about the vehicle, the service so much, like construction. I love historic buildings. We rented a historic building. We've remodeled flat four houses. Most of the jobs that I really enjoy are historic houses. All that technical is only 10%. The other 90% is business, business skills and tactics. It doesn't matter if it's wallets, if it's construction, if it's photography, whatever. The reality is there's a technical aspect that you got to execute perfectly. The rest is business, sales, marketing, communication, all that stuff. And so that tactical business knowledge, I don't think is out there for, like, there's a lot of people talking about $100 million portfolio of, you know, this many. It's like, what about buying your first house and turning that into more value?
Yep.
And then buying a duplex and then cashing that out and buying a mansion. Like, the first 10 years of this journey, and it could have been 5 years, but there's so many people that are like, I'm going to go to a wholesaling class. I'm going to start sending postcards to people, and we're going to do owner financing. And I've had people come in, hey, come here and will you set this up? They're like flippers and investors that got their first 50% of a job stolen from them because they tried to hire the cheap guy in town because they're trying to flip it. They want it cheap. So they won't hire me because I'm expensive, but they'll hire a guy that's using his cousin's license. And then, so it's halfway done. So they're over there doing the work themselves because they lost their money because they hired the wrong person. It's like, you don't want to make those mistakes because you wholesaled and owner financed and flipped and did all these things until you understand the basic mechanics of cost of money, cost of time, skill, understanding working with people. And I figured all that out before I got my massive thing. So it's not a risk for me. It was literally not a risk for me to spend on an 8,300 square foot mansion that has not been updated at all because it was my fourth house. And I was a licensed general contractor, and I have been growing up. So, like, everybody else tried to buy that mansion and then terminated contract. I didn't have to worry about that because I'd already done it. I got an estimate sent to me by the realtor that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. As soon as we went under contract, I looked at the estimate and was like, this is high. Let me get my people in here. She's saying, hey, it's going to be $300,000 to do the basic stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can do all that for $25,000, you know, in the first year. And by the way, none of that $300,000 was updating 11 bathrooms worth of plumbing or updating any electrical. It was like paint, mold, which I got my mold guy out there, and he's like, yeah, it's pretty bad right there, but you can 409 that. And this house doesn't have HVAC. So when you...
Even to your example... That the mansion was your fourth,
yes,
major flip,
yeah,
flip or remodel or
yeah. If you count the duplex as two,
right?
First single family did both units of the duplex, and then I say undergraduate, master's, and then PhD. So my master's was a duplex, which is two units, and then my PhD was that old house. And I literally it started out at $1.6 million. In 2012, I think, is when it was first listed. And I bought it the beginning of 2012, and I bought it the end of 2016. So almost 5 years later, I think, is what it was, for $434. And when we put our offer in, it was listed at eight something. But they carved some land off of it, and then I put under contract. But we also sent a letter. Here's who we are. Here's what we've done. We built a verifiable history of old house remodeling. And so you had six kids selling their parents' house, selling to a family with five kids that likes historic, and they literally viewed us as a continuation of their that legacy of that house. Now, I didn't do that part of it. God did that part. I did Google the family before we sent our offer. What's going on with the story of this house? What's the background? And understand when I was writing a letter to them, I knew who I was writing to. I knew I was writing to a family selling their, I could see that their dad passed away. So I knew the story of this house, and I wrote a letter knowing that story, sharing my story. And so literally they told their realtor, no one else is getting this house. This family is getting this house. And they actually offered to sell or finance to us for a year till we got it figured out. I didn't take the seller financing from them because I wasn't telling anybody I was getting out of the military on the banking or real estate side. So I didn't want to take a seller finance for a year because I was about to be self/unemployed. So I could take a seller financing from them for a year, and I knew I couldn't close any financing 12 months from now because I would have had no job. And so it would have been unfair to take that loan from them. I just pushed and got closed it with a commercial loan and got it done. But it's just that was after, so that's 2016. I bought my first house in 2010. So that's 6 years into real estate. If I would have tried to buy that house as the first house, then I would not have gone under. I would have figured it out, but I wouldn't, like, the gains wouldn't have been as massive. It would have taken me a lot longer if the mortgage didn't cripple me. My first mortgage was less than a grand a month. The Army was paying me 12 something a month. I was making $300 a month. Like, my mortgage and my basic allowance for housing covered my mortgage payment and all my utilities on the first house that we did because we bought it so low. Mm-hmm. We were living in a 2-bedroom apartment for 4 months before we moved into it. So I paid a $750 a month lease and a 923 mortgage for 4 months. My wife was pregnant with our second. She always she cried when she came in after we did demo. I literally went in and just took it down to the studs, all the plaster, mm-hmm. and piled all the plaster in the living room and took it all out with a U-Haul in one motion because I didn't want to have a bunch of demo out in the front yard. I went to Halo school right after that. So I bought it.
Ripped it to the studs. Then
ripped it to the studs. There's a pile of plaster in the living room. And she's like, this was livable when we bought it. We got to move in here in 4 months. And then I went to Halo school for a month. So of the 4 months, I'm going to be in Arizona for a month of it. And that's, you know, you look back at my wife's risk tolerance. She had never seen me do any construction work. Like, we had literally been married for 3 years at this point, I think. I grew up doing it with my dad. She didn't know my technical capacity in construction, really. Like, I didn't have any tools at that point. Part of it is going out and buying tools and going through that iteration. And I had said, it has to get worse before it gets better. And we're going to get this. And we moved in. We did. Literally moved in. I got rewired it, reframed it, drywalled it, floors finished, and we moved in. Like, 4 months, we were in it. Now, that was not, we didn't do any new bathrooms. We didn't do any new kitchen. It was the existing kitchen and existing bathrooms. But we got the 3 bedrooms and downstairs, all the floors refinished, painted, and then we did kitchen 1 bathroom at a time. Just 2 bathrooms. We did the kitchen. We did built-ins. We did painting, all that. Like, the whole house was primed white, like, and we moved in. And we sold that for $105,000 more than we paid for it. Of that, it was probably about 40 in materials. So I made, in 2.5 years, I made another $60,000 on top of my Army paycheck. And if you did a cost benefit analysis right now, that would suck to do that much work for that much time. But I was 26 years old and I had 2 kids. And that isn't counting the fact that that skill set me up to do the duplex, to do the mansion. The benefit was not just the return that I got on selling the house. The benefit was I had done 2 complete bathroom remodels. I had rewired an entire house. I had worked with a bunch of subs. We actually got scammed. Not scammed, But the first tile guy did a terrible job. We went with the cheaper guy. And now that's the first time that I had to, as a homeowner, and I talked to homeowners about this, like, and that's probably a good thing that we could do for Transform is, like, I had two quotes. I went with a cheap guy. It looked terrible. So we paid him half. He used all our tile that we bought from Lowe's and brought there. So I had to tear it out and throw it out the back door. So I lost all, I had to rebuy the tile. And when I told him all the stuff was crooked, he was blaming the studs, you know, the framing behind. It was like grout lines. It was just, so yeah, that was a lesson on a, I probably could go back and figure out what the cost was via email, but it was like a $2,000 lesson, which sucked as a 26-year-old making on what my Army paycheck, $2,000 a month or whatever. Like that hurt to get a month's pay gone, but it wasn't on a whole house remodel. And, you know, so I'm learning business stuff. I'm learning skills. I'm learning people. I'm learning all the this that's all fed into who I am now as a contractor.
It's starting a 15-year process.
So far, yeah. If you talk about 2010, but if you go back even further, it is when I was 13 with and my dad bought a house. So that's the other thing is if you're doing this with your kids alongside with you, I mean, we did Trail Life the other day, 20 boys out there. I'm teaching about how to frame a wall. Talk about, like, sometimes I can feel like I'm not telling, I feel like I'm putting a lot into business and I'm not teaching my sons the skills. So there's an actual kind of tugging at me, like, I'm doing all this. Am I really, are my kids getting it? They're getting it because I just literally was at Trail Life with 20 boys, dropped the trailer, studs. I'm teaching them how to frame a wall. And my son's like, knows where everything is in the trailer. He's pulling stuff out. He's laying stuff out. He's helping me teach the class, essentially. At the end was cleanup. He's putting stuff back in the bins where it goes. He's hanging stuff.
Over time.
Yeah, because he's worked with me at the barn, and I've had him go get me stuff out of the trailer. So I literally, some of the boys are like, hey, can we help you? I was like, no, I'll put it all back because I know where it goes in the trailer. And Eli's putting it back too because he knows. He's already gone and got me the bit driver. He's already gone and got me 3-inch screws. He's already picked up the socket sets. He's already knows where we hang the bags, where the levels go. He's put it all back away. And I was like, that was for me. I was like, the Saturday sessions with dad, they're picking it up. And also my son's getting the business that like I never got. My dad has a software business and I knew I've watched him do that, but like, Jude went with me to a tile design meeting yesterday. He went to the job sites. He's seeing me in my coaching call. He's getting all the business stuff a lot more than I did. I got the risk tolerance. I got to watch my parents take a risk and my dad quit his job and do all that stuff. But I was little. I didn't know functionally what's going on. And they're asking questions. So I think that's the benefit of the thing. If the cost of not taking a risk is not just your loss of earning potential, your loss of job satisfaction. You not taking the risk is also hampering your future generations because they're not able to watch you go through it. You're de-risking your kids taking risks by taking risks in front of them, having them watch you go through it, and conducting yourself like a Christian during it and not, but even, you know, it's crazy to talk with my kids about, oh, we got this job. We signed this. Oh, why are we still in the bus, Dad? Oh, well, I got to sell some more jobs. I got to get some more, you know, this is where our finances are. This is the banking stuff. We're talking about all that stuff. You know, when you have a five-year-old that's like giving me $5 after we went to the land the first time, he's like, here's money for putting money down. He understood that I needed cash to put down to get the loan. He was like, Dad, I'm bought in on this. Here's my money. And we'd already talked about finances and how much you need and why banking, how this works. And I did on a whiteboard at the table. And so he understood. We went and walked land that Daddy needed cash, a certain amount of cash, to get a loan. And he's like, here's your money. So that's the thing about having that multi-generational view. It's not like, oh, my job sucks, and I really wish I had more job satisfaction. Well, you don't have job satisfaction because you're too scared to have job satisfaction. You would rather get handed out money from this guy and grumble about it, when this guy that wrote you the check, he's the one that took the risk. He's the one that lived in a, you know, whatever. And you think that you should have the satisfaction he has, but yet you're just going to sit there and take that money. And your kids are watching that. That's the thing. We haven't talked about it, I don't think, so much, but I talked about it with Rich Lusk in the last interview too. It's like, are your kids looking at your marriage and looking at your professional endeavors and looking at your spiritual walk and your emotional stability and thinking, I really want to become my dad? Like, I watch him every day. He is living, and that's caught, not taught. Like we talked, I think Merkel and I talked about, like, your actions and what you're doing is what actually is causing your kids to be who they are. So by you taking risk, by you and your wife coming up with a vision, by you taking the leap of faith and then struggling through it and then letting your kids watch you do it, you're setting them up. They get to jump off of that risk tolerance thing. One of my friends from the Army was like, we just don't even understand how you're jumping in lack of safety net, like getting out. Mm-hmm. And I literally took him saying it and me thinking about his look at my life. That was to make me even think that what I did was crazy. Like, I wasn't even thinking it was crazy. Like, I was like, for sure we're getting out. This freaking sucks. I hate this stuff. Like, I'm in the best unit in the world, and Department of Defense, I got the coolest toys, and I hate it here. And I want to be free, and I want to be around my kids, and I want to do my own thing, and I'll be a barista. Like, worst case is me staying in this job that everybody in the Army wants and not being able to realize what I can do on my own. And that's the worst case. And so until you're there, until you realize playing it safe is actually probably the worst case for you, especially as a Christian, like, are you seeking the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength? Do you have this urge in your being to launch, go, do your dang thing? And already, the reason you're miserable is because you're squelching your purpose that God is giving you. Maybe the Holy Spirit's bringing that up, and you just keep pushing it down for safety when you're supposed to launch. And, you know, we talked about this the other day. The God that brought the people through the Red Sea, that rained down manna from heaven, that caused victory after victory after victory when it was finally, they were finally allowed to go into the promised land. The guy that is protecting Judah five or six generations removed from King David and sending out the angel to kill 120,000 Syrians in one night. So they wake up and the whole army's dead. Like, that's the same God that we serve now. And we're just too, we have no faith. We have no belief, and we're literally doing, we read the part about the Israelites being like, I wish we had meat. I wish we were back in Egypt. Everybody's in Egypt right now. Like, majority of Christians are in Egypt, mad that they don't have enough straw for bricks, while the promised land and the door is open to them. Like, it's, think about the Israelites in Egypt. Like, you're not, when you work for Amazon and won't put the signature block and get fired, we equate that to persecution of, like, Pharaoh going out and killing all the firstborns. We have no historical perspective. Probably stop so I can get my hair cut because I'm looking like a woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
How long did we talk? An hour?
As always, thank you for listening to that episode and sharing it with a friend. Show notes, et cetera, are located at our website, spearing.co. Also, if you are looking to break free from the corporate wage slave job and want to do it with us, we're trying to build our team, get in touch with us. Let's talk about opportunities here in Southern Pines that may exist for you or your sons that are looking to grow mentally, spiritually, and physically to build a productive household. As always, have a good one.